Sleepy Sarzo boys are cold, and you're listening to Monday Night Blah. What is it?
Monday Night Talk.
Oh.
On WATD.
In WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and we want to thank State Senator Bob Hedlund for joining us and doing a tremendous segment. Like I said, I wanted to kind of get his thoughts on the state of the state and that proposal. His thoughts. Yeah, it may be DOA, and it may not be anything that's considered by the House or the Senate, but still, it's something that's out there that could be considered. Joining us, actually, somebody who wanted to kind of give a little bit of input, herself being a former gubernatorial candidate, Grace Ross. Did you want to kind of give a little bit of a synopsis quickly before we jump into our topic?
Definitely not a synopsis, but two thoughts.
Okay.
First of all, I wish I'd said hello to Hedlund, a friend of mine.
We'll say it now. He's probably listening.
Bob, hi. Didn't realize that's who I was walking in on. Mm-hmm. Two things. One is just, I think, his analysis about why the lieutenant governor is not going to seek the corner office was 100% right on, and certainly I've heard it all over the place, so I think he's not in some minority position about why he thinks that's going on. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting was, since you spent so much time on the transportation budget, the transportation in Massachusetts is way underwater, and the reason is largely because...
So it's like a foreclosure?
It's not dissimilar.
It's almost like a real estate type thing?
It is not dissimilar. Wow. In fact, a big chunk of the debt was incurred by quasi-governmental agencies who got into a derivative deal that was essentially betting against the bank that they were going to make more money on this derivative deal than the bank was going to make. And anybody knows you don't bet against the big banks, right? So they lost big hundreds of millions of dollars. And instead of the governor doing what the governor of California did, which was to go to the big banks that held this debt, the governor of California said, you know what? We are a big kahuna. You want our money. So if you want our money, then you need to write down this debt that was a balloon debt that is essentially a huge windfall for the biggest banks. So it's very similar to the foreclosure stuff. Mm. And our governor has not even entertained the idea that you bring these people to the negotiating table and say to them, this debt was a bad bet by somebody who shouldn't have had the authority to make the bet. Mm. And we are a big business partner of yours. You should not want to drown our taxpayers. And essentially, he's asking the taxpayers to foot a bill that will take many, many years to pay off, which was a windfall profit on a bad deal with a major couple of banks. And so I think the real question is, why aren't we talking about why that debt was incurred?
Very good. That's a very good question, and probably a great topic for another day if we didn't have an even bigger one in front of us into what the city of Brockton might possibly be embarking on.
We are embarking on it.
Okay.
Yes.
But I'm embarking on a study. You're embarking on
that's
a study.
We're embarking on it.
Okay. That voice, of course, is Brockton City Councilor Jay Stewart. He's the gentleman who put forth the resolve to the city council to look at the possibility of maybe taking by eminent domain a bad loan and possibly seeing if you can find partners within the loan community, whether it's, you know, hopefully a local community bank or institutional organization who's willing to work with the people who are in the process of going through a foreclosure and helping them keep them in the homes. Is that correct?
Well, it's partly close. Correct. So let's step back just for a bit and do a little bit of context.
Do that and also connect the dots with Grace being here. What her exact title is, other than being a former gubernatorial candidate?
So Grace is the director of MAPLE, which is the Massachusetts Association Against Predatory Lending. So that's the connection. We met at a forum. We've met before, obviously, but we reconnected at a forum at Harvard Law around what organizations, municipalities, individuals can do to break the back of this foreclosure issue. But the bigger picture is, Brockton, as you may know, has the highest foreclosure rate in the Commonwealth. We're the first city to actually divest money out of the big banks. So we divested over $170 million out of Bank of America, put that into local banks. That was an initiative that was initially seeded by a local group in Brockton called the Brockton Interfaith Community. They introduced the idea to me that they had been working on well before I joined the city council. I wasn't aware of it, and I thought it made a lot of sense. Why are we giving tons of money to folks who are hurting us, taxpayer dollars? And so I led that initiative, and we made that move. Subsequent to that work, I participated in an eviction blockade where residents come together. It's really a public protest against what banks are doing to residents. And the family was evicted. It was such a striking, powerful experience to see that happen in person. And I left that episode thinking to myself, there must be more that the city could do. And it seemed like the best route forward would be, what can the city do in terms of, before the banks take the property, why can't the city intervene? And I was thinking seizing the real property. Through further discovery, I realized that a better option was to actually take or seize the mortgage, so that we're not facing a foreclosure issue at all. We're looking at underwater loans. Brockton, 50% of its loans are underwater. My initial thought was...
Let me interrupt one second. Underwater means that you owe more money on the mortgage.
She read my mind, because I'm going to have you...
of the property.
I was going to have you give the definition of what underwater is, but thank you very much, Grace.
So my initial belief was that the best predictor or of a foreclosure was the type of loan you received. I mean, there's a lot of talk out there about these predatory loans, the balloon payments, interest-only payments, deceptive applications with no income verification type loans, all that sort of stuff. But I came to learn, actually, that one of the better predictors isn't the type of loan, but when you got your loan. So I'll let Grace Ross sort of jump in and explain that.
Well, so it is true that these subprime loans that were sort of catch anybody you can, put them in a home, make your money up front kind of loan, drove the housing bubble. But the real problem is that we've had this housing bubble, this property value bubble, that was completely unrealistic. I mean, completely unrealistic, way outside of, you know, folks, some of us are old enough to remember the bubble that happened at the end of the 1980s that seemed like a big price bubble.
Sure.
But if you compare it to this one, it's dwarfed. It's like a pebble in the road instead of this mountain that we're on right now. And so what happened was, regardless of what drove the price increase, it turns out the best predictor of whether you're likely to be foreclosed upon eventually is whether you got your mortgage when the property values were hopelessly inflated. And if they were wildly inflated, then you might even have gotten a prime mortgage. But when the economy resettles and we're all living back at the level that it's going to settle to at some point, tons of folks who got prime mortgages, particularly in Massachusetts where the prices were really ramped up, they lost that initial down payment that they put down, which was the standard 10-20% down payment. It's disappeared in the price loss. So they're underwater too.
So it's your typical family, great credit, 30-year fixed mortgage, did everything right. They weren't necessarily victims of predatory lending in the traditional sense. The realization is that many of us were victims of predatory lending because there was so much artificial demand created that the values of the home, as Grace just explained, were artificially escalated, that if you were your standard buyer, you were forced to pay those ridiculous prices. And most folks are sort of thinking now, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to pay this extra $500 to $1,500 a month in this mortgage that is totally unrealistic. And then in the next 3 or 4 years, it's going to level out, and then maybe I could sell.
That's not necessarily the case.
It's not going to happen.
It took us over 12 years to bounce back from the bubble. In other words, you look at the bubble in the early 1980s, and then it drops. And then how long did it take for the prices to naturally, in the slow climb, get back up there? Mm. 12 to 14 years. So if we're talking about a bubble now that was somewhere between 4.5 to 5 times as large as the bubble in the 1980s, and this is kind of a specious way to do the math, but if it was to take 4.5 to 5 times as long to come back, because it does it at the same rate, let's say, you're talking 60 years, where I'm probably in my grave before that. So
people eventually walk away from the mortgages because there's little hope that they're going to see value.
Or they get foreclosed.
Or they get foreclosed on, or they walk away from it. And then one last point to set the stage is a third of these mortgages are held by these private trusts. So, you know, you have some mortgages held by local banks, which actually have very little issue with foreclosures. So the local banks work with the families, they refinance, they do all the right things.
They're right there in the community.
It's great. They're great partners. We know with the national banks, it's a pain in the butt, but at least you have someone to talk to. The mortgages that were securitized, sort of sliced and diced and sold to different investors, and they're sort of all over the universe right now.
And in some places sold to countries.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no one to talk to. In fact, there's no legal way to interface with this trust who can't sell its assets. And so you can't refinance. And there are only two legal mechanisms in place to allow some kind of change to happen. You either go through foreclosure, or a city comes in and does eminent domain to start movement on trying to renegotiate these mortgages. Mm-hmm. And some trusts have actually written that they would like cities to come in to help with this because they want to relinquish ownership of some of these mortgages, but they legally can't.
The big danger for these trusts that are held by some trustee, Deutsche Bank as trustee for some five-sentence-long name of a trust, the trust documents, because they are these fancy tax shelter documents, which is a whole thing that may unravel legally whether they were ever quite legal the way they were created. Mm. But the investors who have their money in these trusts, the trusts all lose money. The trustees, who are usually banks, they don't want these because if they try and write down the principal or they try and renegotiate, they can get sued by the investor saying, why are you giving our money away? Whereas if a city or town uses eminent domain, pays present-day value for those, so it's not like you're taking it for zero, but you pay present-day value, then the trustee gets to go, sorry, couldn't do anything about it, don't sue me, the government took it, I can't do anything about it. So there's a way in which they want to get out of these. They can't get out of them without getting sued unless the government, either the feds or a city and town, intervenes.
Okay. So how did this end up something that you took before the city council and presented as a possible solution for all the foreclosures and the homeowner issues that you're seeing in the city of Brockton? How did that come to be, and where do things stand now?
Excellent. So experienced that eviction blockade, was deeply hurt by the fact that you had, the police and constables in this tug of war with residents, and that I saw public servants doing the bidding of these banks. And I see myself as a capitalist. I mean, I own my own business for about 8 years. I do think that the fact that these big institutions took taxpayer bailout money changes the dynamic drastically for me.
Interesting.
So they are in the public domain, as far as I'm concerned. And so they've introduced, I think, more intervention on the part of government to set things straight. So I left that experience thinking what more we could do. I started the sort of discovery process for myself. In a layman's kind of way, conducted my research, happened upon this conference at Harvard Law, met Grace, met some folks there who were investors. Mm. Because I actually, in my early research, realized that the city didn't have the money to do this sort of investment of taking the real estate.
When you're talking about money, you're talking about maybe free cash or stabilization funds or rainy day funds to possibly do that. Was that
right,
correct?
So we don't have the cash to do it. So if you were to seize the property, which, as Grace mentioned, you have to come up with some kind of present day evaluation value of it, that the funds weren't there. So that was the biggest stumbling block in my mind. But once I met folks at this conference, including someone from Mortgage Resolutions LLC out of New York, who basically they're in the business to help cities make this kind of move with upfront resources. And so we had the financial piece sort of thought through, at least for my liking. Harvard Legal and Harvard Legal Aid Bureau had done some work on the legal front to kind of put us in a strong position to say that legally this is something that we could do. Meeting with Grace Ross and others, it became clear that there were nonprofits in the sector who had thought about this specific strategy, and that I felt the city shouldn't be in the business of even managing this process. That's not what we do as a city, but if we could subcontract or partner with a nonprofit who could manage this for us, those three elements came together, and it all made sense.
So I guess the obvious question is, all this work, which I think is great, is going on now by, the city and all, like you said, all these people coming together. And so I guess the obvious question is, what does the city really benefit from doing this? I think it's an obvious answer, but for the people that may not understand, what is the benefit of a city doing this?
I'll start with three obvious answers as a Brockton resident and as a city council and elected official. Number one, it's starts to stabilize the housing market. So we're not waiting for a 20-year, 50-year, 60-year arc and that stabilization to happen. And so that kind of stability, I think, obviously has great benefits for any municipality. Secondly, it frees up a heck of a lot of disposable income. So now if your house is worth, if your mortgage is $200,000, the house is only worth $150,000, and we get you in a loan that's at $150,000, you decrease your monthly payments. So that extra $500 to $1,500 a month, whatever that number is now disposable income that you can reinvest locally. You can, because historically people have used their biggest asset, their home, which is now their biggest liability. But historically you would borrow against the equity to send your kids to college, to start a small business,
to actually give back to the community that you live in.
Well, and there's just regular everyday spending, right? Yeah. I mean, we experience this when we walk down our streets and see, you know, the local coffee shop that used to be thriving. Now nobody stops to get coffee and a muffin because they're trying to make sure they're trying to, you know, stockpile some money to save that mortgage.
And then the last item that's pretty apparent to me is that because we're unlocking, you know, a third of these mortgages that are stuck in these trusts, and we're going to go through a process of ensuring that the folks whose mortgages we seize or have the credit worthiness to be refinanced, we're creating a whole new market for local banks to generate local income. But it's not just the banks. It's then the appraisers, all the folks involved in this real estate transaction locally. We start to gin up new economic development that way.
Did you have something you want? Because it seemed like you had something you also wanted to add into this.
Well, the multiplier bad impacts of foreclosure is also, obviously, you keep people in their homes, you protect the fabric of the community, you don't end up, I mean, Worcester's really badly hit too, which is where I live, so I sort of have a very visceral experience of this. But, you know, it's like you don't have congregations losing their membership, you don't have kids moving from school to school, which is not only bad for those kids, but once it's a high enough percentage of the population that moves every year, the other kids in class can't succeed because it's too much turnover. So you have this really bad multiplier effect that you're going to stop. And the thing I like about this, and maybe a little conceptually, a little farther afield, but when you foreclose on a property, you actually push the price values of all the surrounding properties down. And because a foreclosure is a fire sale, if you sold that same property the same day, but you sold it through the natural market process, you wouldn't lose as much money. So they figure if you sold it on the same day just through a natural market process versus a foreclosure, they lose 22% less value. So to some extent, this allows Brockton to take what right now is this kind of wild, wild west market. Who the hell knows what tomorrow's price is going to be?
Up and down all over the place, right?
Well, also, you get an overcorrection, right? If you keep selling by foreclosure, the prices keep going down and down and down and down. There's no natural floor to it. Whereas this way, you're creating a standard saying today's price value is going to become the standard for a big chunk of the market. You run the possibility of essentially stabilizing that as the floor.
Are you creating a subfloor, so to speak, in order so it's not bottomless, so to speak.
Right, exactly. Yep. And so there's a really good economic argument for why even the local banks who are scared about this or other investors who are scared. In fact, it's the opposite. You should be happy, and that's why we've got this investor group interested. Right. They're not the great humanitarians of the world necessarily. Some of them maybe, but a chunk of them have just looked at the math and looked at the economy and gone, we don't want a bottomless pit market that may fall way under the floor.
Well, I think, you know, I think a couple things on that. I think if you look at the extreme, you look at a city like Detroit, where a lot of these foreclosures, a lot of these, you know, the big banks have actually gone and said and demolished the houses that they hold rather than giving them back. And I think that, to me, with what you're doing is the number one thing, because imagine a city like Brockton where these banks come in or these trusts come in and say, we don't want the home. We don't, and we don't even want the property or the building that sits on it, and all of a sudden the city has these open holes of land, and in areas where you have a lot of foreclosures in groups, you have entire areas that are wiped clean.
Well, it also deals with two other issues that I know the city of Brockton has dealt with. First and foremost, if you have a foreclosed home where maybe somebody's not keeping up with the land, cutting the grass, stuff like that, or as we saw a couple of years ago,
people going in, either squatting and yes. staying in there, fires breaking out, or somebody going in and stealing all the precious metal so they can make a buck.
The copper piping, thing is back yeah. up. You know, they had figured out a way to sort of control the market on copper so that the amount of copper stealing dropped off, it's back up again.
I'll tell you, to your point about banks preferring to, it seems, to destroy the house and then to refinance to the families in the home, I learned about moral hazard, which is sort of driving that philosophy. Banks would prefer to... So these families are in these homes that have these are in these bad situations. In many cases, they have the finances to be good customers and pay their mortgages if they were refinanced to a reasonable rate. But the banks are not interested in refinancing to these families because they believe they're encouraging bad behavior if they do that. But these are the same banks that took all this money for their bad behavior. So it's frustrating to have this sort of moral double standard in place. So
we have just a couple of minutes left. And
what?
I think I wanna, yeah.
What happened?
We got about 6 minutes left. Time flies when you're having fun. But I think I want to, you know, you've got the go-ahead to put a group together. What's the group going to consist of, and what are you guys going to look for in order for it to make this, you know, not only, you know, possible, but also make sure that there's not going to be any breakdown in any in particular system that you're going to put together?
Let me, you're going to talk about who's going to be there, but in terms of the questions, the Mass Alliance Against Predatory Lending is interested in this initiative, partly because we make a commitment when we help out as a partner with a city that's looking at something like this. This is new territory. Mother's, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, is to make sure that the legal ducks are in a row. So while we know conceptually this should work legally, every state has different laws about ownership and foreclosure. We need to make sure that the laws are going to work. We're not setting up the city to do something that might they might get sued for on legitimate grounds in the future. And we also want to make sure to study how we can how the city, for instance, can get the money to pay market value for present day value for these loans in a way that the money legally comes into the city. The city can monitor that money, that expenditure, and we know how the money is going to legally get returned to the folks who put up the money. So we want to make sure that the legal and financial stuff is absolutely sound.
So this is an initiative that's less about foreclosure, more about owners who are underwater and intervening well before the issue of foreclosure becomes an option. So that's important to stress. Local banks, I initially believe, would have been very excited about this because, again, we're talking about opening up a new market for them. They're your reliable partners in the situation. They're also nervous because I think their concern is if a city can come in and take an asset from a securitized trust fund, then later you're going to come after us. So we have to sort of work through those kinds of issues, which is one of the reasons why we're looking to have bankers on this committee, real estate agents, obviously city officials, financial folks, community groups. It's gonna be composed of all the right key stakeholders. So no matter what the recommendation may be at the end of the day, whether to move forward or not, there's a lot of trust that we have the right kind of thought leadership on this issue, and that will allow us to sort of push in whatever direction that committee suggests.
You have the people there that understand what's really going on, who have been there.
And they're on all sides of the issue. So it's going to be made up of folks who are believers, folks who are very skeptical, and I think that's important.
Now, do you plan on going back to the city council at any point in time after the findings and giving them the findings in order to put this in action, or say this is something that might need further review?
We anticipate having a recommendation by May 1st. We see it broken, that the process is broken down to four sort of buckets, an open meeting where everyone comes with their concerns, pros and cons, looking at the legal piece, the financial piece, and the management piece of the proposal.
Yeah, and I think that our goal is to bring back something that's viable if it can be done, and if it can't be done, then we'll thank the city council for their time. But we think it's important for the city, for the folks who listen to this process, who engage in this process, to understand that ultimately the city council will decide something that's like this, like an eminent domain thing. It's in the laws and powers of the city council and the mayor of Brockton to move this forward or not. So it's not something that's out of control. It's not something that some random set of folks are going to decide. The city will stay in control of the process, whatever proposal we bring, and will be in charge of the implementation. And so it continues to be something that the people have accountability for.
And is this something that you're hoping that will, if there's a breakthrough with this process and this group, that this is something that could be shared with the communities throughout the Commonwealth?
throughout the nation.
Yeah, absolutely. But we want to make sure first that what we're doing is doable and that it benefits, as we expect it to, such a wide range of folks in a community, and the community stays in control.
Anything in closing on this? Because I would like you to come back maybe in the next month or two, find out where you guys are at, what you're looking at, what you're pouring over at that particular time. Have both of you come back, and if you want to bring somebody else in as well, maybe a lender or somebody who's looking at the financial part of it, you know, and kind of share the details. Let's do that. But anything in closing?
Well, I don't think I've publicly enough thanked my colleagues in the City Council for voting for this measure. It's anytime you mention eminent domain and government seizing stuff, people freeze up. And so the City Council, my colleagues, could have easily taken the safer route and said, we're not going to do it. But they were, I think, courageous and wise in voting in favor to just study it more. And I'm certain we'll come back with a thorough, rigorous report that will add new insight on what we should do next.
I would add, I think that the city councilors were incredibly diligent. They kept us there for quite a long time, asking a million questions. We want the folks who come to our first open meeting to enumerate those questions. We're not so much any of us wedded to the outcome as we are wedded to a really thorough and responsible process. But my hat's off to the city councilors of Brockton. They asked some really, really insightful questions. They were right on it.
Well, Grace, Jace,
Grace Jace, Tosh G, Rossi.
Yeah. it's all coming together. I want to thank you for making the trip and talking with us about this particular, hopefully a solution for folks who are going through foreclosure and who may need the help.
Or folks who are underwater.
Underwater. Yeah. And we'll look to hear more of this story in the next couple of weeks.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back with Paul Hebert.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station, 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.